I don't know if you ever look at recruitment ads or employment advertisements. Maybe you're past that stage of life. Maybe you've yet to enter that stage of life. Maybe, like me, you're gainfully employed. But maybe also, like me, you're curious about what different companies are seeking and offering to prospective hires. If you look at most ads, you'll discover an inventory of duties followed by a list of qualifications. And then somewhere near the end, there is talk of compensation, salary and benefits, opportunities for career development. Here's one for a job at Starbucks. You'll note that there's much more involved than simply selling coffee and getting paid. Do you want to work at Starbucks? All job seekers are eligible if they are friendly team players with positive attitudes, are willing to work flexible shifts, including early mornings, have great customer service skills, are comfortable in a fast-paced environment. So what does Starbucks offer in return? Benefits and RRSP contributions, tuition reimbursements, employee discounts, and more. And you're thinking, you get that for working at a coffee shop? Sign me up. Well, those familiar with the life of faith will realize that we also have a job description. As the Westminster Catechism reminds us, our chief end is to glorify God and enjoy God forever. What do? We worship God. What's our reward? We enjoy God. That's it. That's the life of the saints. But like most job descriptions, they're more than just, when you flesh them out, more than just one simple task and benefit. So can more be said about the life of the saints? Today's lesson, I think, will help us in this regard. But before we get there, I'm just going to provide a quick review. I mean, last week we heard about Solomon. Remember why Solomon, who was given incredible insight? Like his father, Solomon was a flawed man. While his understanding was legendary, he didn't apply that same God-given wisdom to his own personal life. Well, today we re-enter the biblical narrative after the era of David and his son Solomon. The once glorious kingdom of Israel has now split, and a man named Ahab is reigning over the northern tribes. As far as political histories go, Ahab is regarded as a successful king. But as for his moral and religious record, well, the Bible sees him as sort of scraping the bottom of the barrel. I mean, Jezebel has a neighbor murdered for the simple reason that she wants to expand the palace garden. Together, they ignore the God of Israel, who brought them up from the land of slavery. They corrupt Israel's worship practices and introduce other gods. Now, the three miracle stories we heard today are meant to teach the Bible's listeners about the supremacy of the God of Israel. But while delivering an important public service announcement, this passage tells us a lot more. It's a sort of Cole's notes on the life of faith. I mean, we learn about the tasks and responsibilities of faith. We also learn about the incredible benefits. So what about those responsibilities? Well, looking at Elijah, we can see rather clearly that the life of the saints involves suffering. Suffering in service. That's probably not something you look for as you scan various want ads. But in today's story, God's servant Elijah is given the difficult job of bringing tough words to a tyrant. And while you might think that performing such a risky task would be mightily rewarded, he isn't handed a holiday in Barbados. I mean, after he delivers that message, Elijah has to skip town. He's forced to depend on handouts from strangers and from the resources of nature. Tough life serving God. Well, think of the last time your volunteer efforts were rewarded with ungrateful words from a person you were serving. Think of the last time you rearranged a busy schedule to accommodate a busy, some sort of committee meeting, only to enjoy a solid hour of bickering and complaining with no constructive decisions to move forward. Elijah reminds us that when it comes to the life of faith, the life of the saints, service involves suffering. But Elijah's not the only person to teach us about the responsibilities and tasks. I mean, we meet that woman, the widow of Zarephath, who shows us that the life of faith also involves taking risks. When Elijah approaches her and asks her for water, what does she do? Well, she responds according to the rules of hospitality and gives him a glass of water. But when he asks her for a meal, well, she sort of balks at this request. I mean, she's a widow. She has no protector. She's already lost her significant other. Then she explains her dire situation. I mean, she's starving. She's preparing her last meal. But Elijah then counters with the promise of a miracle. He asks her to feed him first. I mean, did you notice that? He doesn't simply ask to share what she's cooking. He asks the widow to make a meal for him first. He asks her to trust that there's going to be enough left over. In the same way, God's Spirit nudges God's people, calling us to take risks in our families' lives, to take risks in the life of the church community, to do things like inviting guests into our homes, people who are different from us, to throw money towards projects that benefit others when we could think of 10 different ways we could use that money for ourselves. Often, the opportunities come at that precise moment we feel we have nothing left to spare. Just like that case of that widow. Well, what does she do? Does she tell Elijah to hit the road? No. She takes a leap of faith. And we are shown that the life of faith, the life of the saints, involves risk. But I think there's one more lesson that can be provided by this story, and this lesson is provided this time by both Elijah and the widow. Together, they show us that the life of faith involves bringing our questions and our concerns to God. I mean, they're in a time of famine together. They're eking out an existence together, and then what happens? Well, the widow's son gets sick. Text tells us his illness was so severe that there was no breath left in him. When this happens, the widow questions Elijah, asking why he brought this on her. When Elijah is alone with the lifeless body, he cries out to heaven, "Oh God, my God, why have you brought this terrible thing on this widow who has opened her home to me? Why have you killed her son?" The widow can't understand why she's being repaid evil for her kindness. Elijah can't understand why God would allow such a tragedy to occur. But together, they raise their questions and complaints. Together, they teach us that the life of faith, the life of the saints, involves an open and honest dialogue with God. Well, what do you think about this job description? Does Starbucks look a lot better? Suffering, risk, opening your life to God? Well, remember that most job descriptions start with tasks and responsibilities and then move on to the benefits. In the case of this story, the benefits ascribed to the life of faith are worth waiting for. You see, while Elijah experiences suffering living in the wilderness, God cares for him with crows. He's waited on by ravens. When the oasis dries up, God provides another solution, the audacious generosity of a poor stranger. Elijah will suffer, but he will also experience God's provision. When the widow expects starvation, she too has her needs cared for, a bottomless jug of oil, an endless jar of meal. The widow takes a risk, but that risk is rewarded. And then when her son falls ill, God hears the lament and prayer of her visitor. God raises him back to life. And both she and Elijah are reminded that God hears our complaints, God listens to our prayers. Their stories together teach us that God cares for God's people. God will rally the forces of humanity. God will rally the forces of nature. God will do things that are supernatural, all to care for his saints. Now, you might note that in all of these situations, the care of God is momentary. The ravens will fly away, the cooking supplies will dwindle. And we know that that son who is preserved at that moment will one day cease to breathe. But the moral, or the lesson we get from the story, is that God meets the saints in the middle of each and every new challenge. As they risk faith, follow in suffering servants, bring their complaints and concerns to God, God continually tends to them. We see this lesson lived out in the pages of the Bible, but I think if you look closely at some of these folks, you'll see those lessons taught in their own lives. In my last congregation, I had the privilege of knowing a woman named Magda. She had known her share of hardship. I mean, she had fled Hungary during the revolution. She told me she had to eat grass to survive. But it wasn't just that. She raised a son who got tangled up in addiction. She outlived two husbands. The breast cancer that she beat later returned in the form of a wicked bone cancer. Now, Magda once told me a story about a church service in Hawaii, being there and still grieving the death of her first husband. Well, she said something that was said in the service really caught her and challenged her. It was like God speaking to her directly, saying, "Magda, don't worry so much about yourself. Think about the needs of others, and your needs will be cared for as well." Magda accepted that challenge and committed her life to tending to those around her. Now, I can testify that despite the pain of her illness, she grew in thanksgiving and gratitude till the very end. Death was not the enemy that would tear her away from her loved ones. Death would bring her closer to the God who had consistently provided for her needs. May her story, may the stories of our loved ones, may the story of Elijah and the widow also be our story. And may we live the life of the saints. Amen.